Good morning, everyone. Tuesday, September 3rd. Millions of Americans going back to work after the Labor Day holiday, but just another day in the war across the Atlantic. This Tuesday morning brings us reports from the British and Russian capitals and late bulletins from New York. We take you first to London.
This is John McVane in London. British bombers last night raided Cologne and other targets in the Rhineland region of Germany. German raids on Britain were on a small scale and were concentrated on two towns in northeastern England. Reports from Ankara that the Iranians have already signed armistice terms with the British and Russians aren't yet confirmed in London. The reports from Ankara, however, give a pretty good indication of the British line of thought. As seen from London, the situation seems to be that while the broad principles of the agreement have been decided, only the details still remain to be worked out. The Iranians are said here to be showing good feeling and good sense, and it's a good assumption that when it's all over, the Germans won't be in any position to cause trouble for the Iranians, the British, or the Russians. This probably means that reports that German embassy officials would be allowed to remain in Iran aren't well-founded. President Roosevelt's Labor Day speech has been given full radio and press publicity in Britain. His words are taken by commentators as a sign that America is awakening to the fact that Germany does threaten the world. One commentator says the speech was received with unusual eagerness and anxiety in Britain because of growing nervousness that American enthusiasm for the Allied cause has not been maintained in recent weeks. The British don't think that America has yet realized the full implications of total war production. But one paper, the Daily Mail, warns the British, "It's not for us to cast stones. Our own attitude was very similar before the fall of France. If Americans think they may relax because Russia is fighting the Germans, so also do too many people in this country." Information reaching Greek circles in London today from a reliable neutral source clarifies the picture of what the Axis occupation has meant to Greece. Sugar, for instance, can be only obtained at 10 times the pre-invasion price. Meat is also up 1,000% and can be bought only on the black market. Potatoes are 8 times their former price. The bread ration is so small that workmen find they can't do heavy work, and fainting from hunger is a common occurrence. When complaints are made, the German authorities say, "You haven't seen anything yet. In Poland, 600 people a day die from starvation. The German troops are living off the country. German troops scattered in the cities and villages have done a thorough job of looting." And the standard answer that the German authorities make to complaints is, "This is a conquered country. Everything in it belongs to Germany." German soldiers in the Ammonia Square in Athens have made a practice of stopping people and taking their watches and jewelry. The Athens police could only tell the Greeks that they had better give up their belongings and not complain. The Greeks have seen German ships loaded with Greek wheat in the Piraeus, and the country has been well stripped of tobacco. The German soldiers are allowed to have as many boxes of Greek cigarettes as they want for 6 drachmas a box. They sell them to black bourse operators for 20 drachmas, and the public buys them for 30 drachmas. The Athens Power Company has coal for about 3 months. The Germans say they won't send any coal to Athens, so when the 3 months are up, there'll be no light or power in the Greek capital. Although nominally the Italians are in control of Greece, German garrisons are still in the country, possibly because the Germans don't trust the Italians and because they fear that if they left, there might be a successful Greek revolt against the Italians. The Italian soldiers in Athens always go about in groups. As a propaganda gesture, several 100 cases of milk were sent from Italy for the use of Greek children. Pictures were taken of Italian soldiers distributing the milk to the children. Then the Germans stepped in and took the bulk of the milk. According to eyewitnesses, a group of people were waiting for a bus in one of the main squares of Athens. A truckload of Italian soldiers rolled up. Some of the soldiers surrounded the Greek civilians. Then other soldiers produced bread and started handing it out to the people, while a movie cameraman ground out a film of the scene. After the pictures were taken, the soldiers gathered up the bread again and the whole outfit rolled away. Although the penalty for hiding British soldiers is death, many British soldiers are scattered throughout Greece, and the Greeks say, "As long as we have one potato left, we'll share it." One British soldier came to a Greek hospital every day for 2 weeks to have an infected hand treated. Doctors, nurses, and patients knew he was British, but nobody tried to claim the cash award for informing the Germans as to the whereabouts of a British soldier. This is John McVane in London, returning you to the National Broadcasting Company in New York.
Here are some late bulletins from New York. Berlin. The Russo-German front appears to be substantially unchanged this morning. The Germans speak in general terms of the continued advance on Leningrad, and they tell of the first Nazi bombing attack on the Crimean Peninsula in the Black Sea. According to the German news agency, 100 Soviet planes were destroyed yesterday. German industries in the Rhineland were attacked again last night by Britain's Royal Air Force. Berlin says the raiding forces were weak and that they only damaged apartment buildings. A port in northeast England was the center of the German air attack. The Nazis identify the city as Newcastle. A British communique acknowledges damage and casualties there, but it says Nazi activity was small-scale elsewhere. Tokyo. An official Japanese spokesman says Tokyo again is drawing the attention of Washington and Moscow to Japanese concern over shipments of aviation gasoline to Russia. The spokesman adds that Japanese-American negotiations are in a delicate stage, and that the less said about them right now, the better. The same spokesman was asked to comment on the statement of a Japanese military aide that Japan will use force if necessary to prevent her encirclement. The Japanese official replied that it would be a mistake to draw any inference from the apparent difference between statements of Japanese military and civilian informants. Rome. The Italians declare that the British have bombed the Sicilian town of Crotone. The Italian high command dismisses material damage as only slight, but lists a dozen civilians as dead and 24 more wounded in the wake of the bombing. The Italians also accused the British of machine gunning a train in Sicily and injuring some of the passengers. Moscow. For the fifth day in a row, the Russian high command today limits itself to a statement that heavy fighting is going on along the entire front. Military dispatches reaching Moscow, however, say the Red Army is making its strongest stand of the war right now. What is perhaps the best story on the Russo-German war comes from London this morning. The London Daily Express declares that the German lines are bending in parts of the north and central sectors. The newspaper's correspondent at Stockholm tells of successful Russian counterattacks at three points on the Leningrad front and in the Smolensk-Gomel sector of the central front. The counterattacks are described as increasingly powerful, and the Stockholm correspondent says the Soviet high command is using many new divisions recently brought up from the interior. In one zone at least, the Daily Express dispatch says the Russians have had considerable success, and the Germans are said to be making a disorderly retirement in that area, leaving behind a great number of dead, wounded, and prisoners. Here's another story from Russia. Moscow. Russian counterattacks and fighting forays behind the German lines are supposed to have given the Red Army more time to dig in before the threatened city of Leningrad. The Moscow communique describes Russian positions as unchanged for the fifth consecutive day. Incidentally, the Moscow radio asserts that the German army faces a slow death from the terrific losses of 10.5 weeks' costly assault. The broadcast places Nazi casualties at 1 million killed and 1.5 million wounded. And that's the latest news on the war. Earl Godwin is standing by in our own nation's capital, and for word from him on developments at home, we take you to the newsroom in Washington.
And good morning, folks and everybody. I think it only fair to you, as a reporter in Washington, to make some comment on what John McVane reported to you as being the attitude of the British people toward the president's speech yesterday, insofar as the British people expressed the thought that the president's speech showed that the American people are awakening to the fact that Hitler is so-and-so and so-and-so. As here in Washington, it is perfectly well understood among the highest, livest official circles that the president is far out in front on this thing. His administration is with him, but as one cabinet officer told me not 48 hours ago, something has got to be done to sell the administration's position to the whole American people. Here in Washington, it is perfectly well understood that there is a hesitancy on the part of the peace-loving American people to go all out in something which they believe will lead to war. But possibly the most important thing to occur in Washington today will be the meeting of the new board of the seven heads of defense agencies, headed by Vice President Wallace. I call it the Super Seven, who will have the power to divert the stream of American resources and materials so as to have an ironclad rule over what can be made for the civil population of the United States, your stuff, your building, your furniture, your food, your homes, your cars, and what will be made for defense and for the increasing lend-lease program. The President's Labor Day speech might leave you, might leave some of you guessing as to whether he means that America will have to go to war, but there can be no argument that he called for more production now and that he called for better safeguarding of British and other ships carrying American munitions to the battlefields, and the battlefields include Russia. Incidentally, Donald Nelson, who will be the executive director of this board of seven heads, I understand, believes that in order to make this Lend-Lease program and defense program a success, that this board of Super Seven will have to call on industry to do a seven-day-a-week job for defense and Lend-Lease alone, even if that means almost practically starving the civil population for some of the stuff they need right now in the way of cars, refrigerators, and so forth and so on. Today's American policy, I should say, if you will read carefully through the president's speech yesterday, is one of more goods, more defense goods, more munition, and stronger guard taking it across. On the other hand, Senator Byrd of Virginia continues to attack the administration's rearmament program, not in its policy or its results, but Byrd still says that the United States fails to supply Great Britain with the equipment she needs, and he calls for the appointment of a single director. He doesn't like the Super Seven a little bit. There are important moves in the new defense setup. They will probably be announced today. It is known that Vice President Wallace wants to make the first meeting of this Board of Seven today a most important policy conclave, rather than a mere organization get-together for the purposes of finding out where they sit and having their pictures taken. One thing staring America and the world in the face is the fact that half of the Lend-Lease and defense money okayed by this Congress is still there. $50 billion okayed and appropriated. $26 billion used for orders, and the orders not yet completed. It is rumored here that the new policy is to get those orders out and on the way, even if it means, as I said, 7 day weeks for labor and industry. By the way, what do you think about the movies? I'll bet you all go to them. Are they stirring a war feeling in this country? Are they part of a war propaganda? Many people here think so. Many people throughout the country think so. And a Senate subcommittee intends to find out just what there is about it. This Senate subcommittee is headed by Senator Worth Clark of Idaho, a strong anti-war man, non-interventionist. Idaho Clark has before him two resolutions of inquiry into the movies, one by the other Clark, Senator Bennett Clark of Missouri, who, of course, as you know, is a strong interventionist also, and another one by strong interventionist, if there ever was one, Nye of North Dakota. They intimate pro-war in the movies. They think they see the hand of war writing the script, grinding the crank, and strong foreign propaganda. There will be on this a battle royal, for the motion picture industry has picked Wendell Willkie as their counsel. From the array of movie names that we have from the committee already, names headed by the columnist Jimmy Fidler, there are Will Hayes, Barney Balaban, Harry Warner, Daryl Zanuck. I should think one would be justified in saying that there will be a battle royal Hollywood style. And by the way, this is the first business day under the new government's restrictions concerning installment buying. They went into effect yesterday morning, but of course the Labor Day holiday delayed their full operation. And that's all from Washington at this time.
And that brings this morning's news roundup to a close. Our reporters were John McVane in London and Earl Godwin in Washington. We regret that we were unable to contact Moscow for our scheduled broadcast. Keep tuned to this station for the latest news. This is the National Broadcasting Company.